Dublin's Talking Sport with Ken Doherty and Reddy Corrigan.
Sponsored by InsureMyVan.ie. Reduce your price, not your cover.
Ladies and gentlemen, at the start of the fourth round, Gordon Player having retired, the winner, Michael Carew.
By Kinsler, Quinn heads on. Oh, surely this time for Keane. And Ireland do it. Robbie Keane.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
A very good morning to you and welcome to Dublin's Talking Sport here on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. Declan Drake in for Reggie Corrigan till 11 o'clock this morning to guide you through the very best of local, national and indeed international sport but over the next couple of hours. We'll shortly be kicking off as we do with our very own Ken Doherty to get his take live from the UK on the sporting stories of the week. No doubt Ronaldo domestically and Ronaldo in Europe may feature in that, I'm sure. In racing, we'll hear from George McDonough, racing pundit and Over the Line show co-host, as he previews this weekend's races and shares with us his lucky 15. In GAA, the Go Ahead Ireland Dublin Club Championships are in full flow. Nigel McCarthy of We Are Dublin will join us to look at the men's and ladies football championships, while Sean Lane, our hurling analyst, will be with us in studio discussing all things related to the small ball game in the capital. In football, we have Alan Cawley, of course, of Cawley's Call, to chat about last night's FAI Cup quarterfinal action, the Premier League action today, and get his take on what happened in Europe during the week as well. And in golf, we are delighted to speak once again to Deirdre Smith, one of Ireland's leading golf amateurs, to preview the Ryder Cup and discuss the Irish involvement in the KLM Dutch Open, which is ongoing at the moment. And we'll also be joined by journalist Louise Lawless, who will be on to discuss the controversy around the Connacht women's rugby team changing facilities last week during their third place playoff against Ulster in the Vodafone Interpro Championship at Donnybrook. That'll be an interesting chat. And then an NFL Steve from the UK Packers podcast is here to talk about Wild Week 1, where he saw a lot of the Super Bowl favourites lose or barely squeak a win, including his beloved Packers, who slumped to their worst loss in recent memory. Be interesting to get his thoughts on that. As per usual, we welcome your thoughts and opinions. You can get in touch with us rather on the show here 087 11 55 77. WhatsApp is 087 188 1068, and of course we're all over social media as well. Facebook is Dublin's Talking Sport, Twitter is at Sport 1068, and indeed Instagram now as well, Dublin's Talking Sport 1068. So hopefully plenty to keep you entertained there between now and 11 o'clock on this rather grey, gloomy Saturday morning here in Dublin's Docklands. We'll certainly do our best to brighten your morning up until 11 o'clock. Right, as promised, we're going to start the show as we usually do, speaking to our very own Ken Doherty, live from the UK. Very good morning to you, Ken.
A very good morning to you, Declan. And the weather, how are you?
The weather in your part of the world this morning compared to ours?
Well, actually, I'm not in the UK. I'm in Fungarola, which is very, very nice. It was 29 degrees yesterday, and it looks like it's going to be something very similar today. So it's very, very nice over here.
Sorry I asked.
I thought that would cheer you up a little bit better, you know?
Yeah. It's about 10 degrees. You know? It's grey, it's overcast, and there's rain on the way, so... Couldn't be any more different. You know. But let's start a little chat with, I suppose, last Saturday. We hyped it up no end, the return of Ronaldo to the Premier League and Manchester United playing Newcastle, of course, as they were last Saturday. Mm. And the little Portuguese magician certainly didn't disappoint on the day.
No, he certainly didn't, did he? And the atmosphere, the ground and everything, I think it's just ramped up the sort of... the real feel-good factor that he's back, funny enough, he did say he was quite nervous, you know, starting off, because there's a big expectation on him as well, even though he's played in all these great clubs and been so successful, scored so many goals, but he didn't fail to disappoint at all. The atmosphere of the ground was just electric from start to finish. You know, speaking with people as well, they've never felt an atmosphere like it for a long, long time at Manchester United, so that's a good thing. And of course, he produced, you know, a couple of goals as well. Particularly the second goal was fantastic. It's real Ronaldo. First goal, you know, anticipation. I think what's going to happen is that he's going to ramp up the crowd. He's also going to ramp up a lot of the players around him. Now, that didn't happen in Europe. We'll talk about that in a minute. But particularly for the home matches and the whole team, I think, you know, the feel-good factor, the excitement of playing with him, and hopefully that the rest of the players will be able to step up to the mark as well.
Different people, of course, have different opinions on how many goals he might actually score between now and the end of the season, but he's off to a flyer with that brace last week. Well, what do you think he's capable of ending up with this season, Ken?
I think he could definitely get 20 goals without a shadow of a doubt. I know it's going to be interesting about the penalty taking, but I think Bruno Fernandes will still take the penalties. You saw even from, you know, last week, he wants to take the free kicks as well. So, you know, it's going to be interesting. But I think he's one of those guys. He's not the Ronaldo. When I saw him play at Manchester United and he'd run down the wing and, you know, do all the tricks or whatever, he's not that Ronaldo. He's a much more mature Ronaldo. But even, you know, at his age, at 36, you saw him, like, outpacing the fullback there, 20 miles an hour. He's still able to sprint, but it sort of comes and fits and starts and doesn't do it for the whole game. So, but he's a much more clever Ronaldo now. You know, he anticipates from the first goal. He anticipates well. And he's clever with how he sort of makes his runs and how he conserves his energy. But he's still world-class, you know, and always the danger in the box with headers. We saw that against Ireland as well. One of the best headers of the ball that we've ever seen. And I think definitely 20-plus goals.
Yeah. So that was Saturday, a real feel-good factor around Old Trafford as the fans left, having seen the second coming of Ronaldo. A bit of a different story midweek against the Young Boys of Bern. What happened there?
Oh, yeah, completely. I mean, it was a disaster, wasn't it? You know, not a great start in the Champions League to Young Boys. And even though Ronaldo scored again, you know, I just thought, there's actually a lot of stuff on TalkSport Radio over in the UK and different sort of outlets about sort of Ole's sort of inept sort of coaching ability, you know, and that may have come to a little bit to the fore, and that would be the worry for me. I think, you know, like going to the back five and not being able to cope against Tanner, sort of letting Young Boys sort of dominate them. I mean, Young Boys dominating Manchester United, even though they're down to 10 men, I think the coaching qualities sort of, or the lack of coaching qualities sort of came out a little bit. And I'm not one to sort of, you know, really slag off, because I like Ollie and I think he definitely should stay for at least for the season and see how he gets on. But I thought he showed his sort of ineptness, you know, and not being able to readjust the team against 10 men and sort of let the Young Boys come on to them and let them dominate, you know, and that should never happen against Manchester, even if it is 10 men, you know. So I'd be worried from that point onwards, you know. Okay.
And then what must have been very hard for you then later on in the week was to see Liverpool turn over AC Milan the way they did at Anfield as well.
I thought that was a great game. I must say, you know, even though I don't like Liverpool with it, but I think I like football, you know, I like to see great games, and it was a fantastic game. I mean, we're all watching it there and Fish Alley over here, you know, and loads of Liverpool fans around me, but it was a fantastic game. Liverpool are going to be thereabouts again this year, you know. They're going to be hard to stop. City are going to be hard to stop. Chelsea are going to be hard to stop. It's going to be a really, really tight league this year, you know. I think the teams are all going to take points off each other, and Liverpool could go very well in the Champions League. Man City could as well. They had a very good win. And I think it's going to be, you know, Manchester United are going to be up there as well, of course. You know, it's going to be between those four. It's going to be very, very close this year.
I'm going to talk to Alan Colley a little bit later on about the Pep Guardiola situation there during the week, where he was talking about the attendance at the Etihad for Europe and what he wants today from the Manchester City fans. I think it's Southampton they're playing at home. But I mean, can you understand his frustration, or would you tend to side with the fans? Because, you know, if say you have a family of four, Ken, right, for argument's sake, your adult tickets might cost you £50 a piece, right? Two kids' tickets could cost you £20 each. Then you have to drive there and food and all the rest of it. And that's on a Wednesday. And then to go and do the same again on a Saturday is nearly impossible, isn't it?
Yeah, of course it is, I mean, if they want big crowds, just reduce the prices, you know? That's the way I'd look at it. It's not as if they need the money. Cheapen the tickets. That's what I'd say, Declan, you know? And that's the way it should be, you know, because the, you know, the fans have been asked a lot, like, you know, over the last, like, since it became Premiership, the ticket price has gone up, you know, and it's very, very difficult for families of four, you know, even for, you know, two lads going or whatever, you know, still expensive, you know, so cheapen the tickets and then you get bigger crowds, but they're never going to get bigger crowds at Man City in any way, you know, because it's very hard to fill the stadium there, you know,
yeah,
on Saturday and on the Champions League day as well, so it is going to be difficult for them.
Yeah, I thought he made a real mountain out of it. Yes, you know, to be honest with you,
yeah,
you know, he really did.
Even if they were giving the tickets away in Manchester, they probably still wouldn't get full. Don't worry about that.
Yeah, but you probably find most of their fans are fairly local, like, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
The general Manchester area, as opposed to Dublin, Madrid, Barcelona, etc., that they fly in every week to Old Trafford.
The prawn sandwich brigade.
Oh, don't start. Oh, by the way, speaking of the prawn cocktail brigade, reminded me, of course, that it was Roy Keane's 50th birthday recently, and you had a big birthday, well, a birthday yourself during the week as well, of course, so congratulations on that.
Yeah, yesterday we were out playing golf and managed to win the golf yesterday as well. So it was a nice day. Yeah, 52 yesterday. I'm 52, a couple of years. Can't believe I'm a couple of years older than Roy Keane. That really hurts me, you know.
Yeah. And what stars did you happen to share the golf course with yesterday, if any?
No. All the boys, all the lads. We come over here every year and we have a game of golf, and there's 14 of us all together. Great fun, great bunch of lads. We had some great fun.
Good stuff. Glad you enjoyed it anyway. Now, next weekend is going to be an absolute feast, particularly for golf fans, of course, with the Ryder Cup taking place at Whistler Straits. The wild cards, or the captain's picks, were announced last Sunday evening by Padraig Carrington, the European team captain, and of course included is Shane Lowry, as everybody would have expected. What's your overall thoughts on the team now, a week out from the tournament, Ken?
I think it's a really strong team. I really do. He was always going to pick Shane Lowry over Justin Rose. I think that was the controversial one, you know, without a shadow of a doubt, and the one that we're all talking about, you know, because Rose is a former number one, and you know, has been much more successful than Shane Lowry over the years. However, I think Shane Lowry is a great team man, you know, and he will bring a lot to the Ryder Cup team. And apparently, you know, reading between the lines, apparently Rose is not as much of a team man as the likes of Lowry would be, or Garcia would be even, you know. So I'm delighted Shane Lowry's in. He's going to be a great addition to the team. And it's hard for Justin Rose, you know, because he's been there for so long and, you know, and represented, you know, the Ryder Cup team very, very well indeed. You know, I always remember that match against Phil Mickelson. A couple of years ago, it was just amazing how he won that match and the quality of the match. You know, and Rose has been a fantastic player down through the years. But I think, you know, Harrington was always going to pick Lowry, and it's great for Ireland that Lowry is in as well, you know.
Yeah, I think the fact that Shane didn't qualify automatically kind of made it a bit more difficult for him. He may have preferred him to qualify automatically, and then Rose probably would have been one of his picks after that.
Yeah, I think so. I think Rose was just the unlucky one to miss out. I mean, it's hard, you know, because he had to pick Garcia as well, who's been very successful. I don't think Garcia, I'm not quite sure whether Garcia has such a record where he's never lost a singles match in the Ryder Cup. I'm not quite sure about that, but he's been so good in the Ryder Cup, Garcia, you know, over the years, that he had to pick him. And Lowry was, you know, because obviously the Irish connection as well. Well, but Lowry, you know, he's there on merit. Lowry's a class player. He's been having a good season, you know, and he's going to be a real sort of, he's one of those persons that will really lift the rest of the guys as well, you know, so he's not there just because he's a mate of Harrington. He's there because he's a class player, you know, and he's a former British Open winner. And he's been playing well of late. So Justin Rose hasn't been playing as well as he normally does. And so for me, I'm delighted Lowry is in. But I'm really looking forward to it. I can't wait for it, to be honest, you know.
Deirdre Smith, of course, is coming up shortly. And
it'd be interesting to hear what Deirdre says, because, like, you look on the other side of the coin, you look at the Americans, and they're all fighting with each other, you know, hardly, you know, they don't talk to each other, half of them, so it's going to be very, even though they've got so many great players in that American side, a lot of them don't get on with each other, you know, so I don't know how they're going to manage that, but it's going to be very, very interesting, you know. I love them.
My own observation, for what it's worth, and I'm no golf expert, is that the Americans don't have the team ethic as such. They have the ability, obviously, whereas we have a nice mixture of both, maybe, in Europe.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Americans have a lot of individuals, but however, I think the our team, our European team, will be very strong on team ethic, you know, team bonding and stuff like that. And that's a big factor in any team sport, you know, that guys get on with each other, they gel well and they gin each other up. And it's a great boost for every one of those players going out on the first tee that they know the rest of the team are behind them, you know, and that may not be the case for America, you know.
I'm not sure what the time difference is between us and Whistling Straits, but one thing I'm sure of is that Ken Doherty's phone will be switched off all next weekend, pretty much, except of course to talk to us here in the programme, naturally enough, as you would expect. But any other phone calls, forget it once the Ryder Cup is on.
And of course the coverage is exceptional as well. You know, everybody could just go to it for next week. It should be fascinating. I think it's going to go close. It will be pretty close, but I think the Europeans are going to shade it without a shadow of a doubt. You know.
Okay, right, interesting. We look forward to covering that next weekend on the
program. What about Mayo? What about the Mayo, Becky, before you go?
No, I'm getting looks here through the window. I don't think we're allowed to mention that this week.
Poor L. Jane.
They get used to it down there after 70-odd years, whatever it is, don't they? You know.
Oh, I felt so sorry for them, I must say. I mean, delighted the way Tyrone, you know, win it. But Mayo, I was just hoping that Mayo would win, you know. But it goes on and on.
It is. It does. Well, listen, it's like most sports, Ken, the best team always wins. And the Tyrone were the best team last weekend.
Yeah.
We'll be back next year again.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Same every year since 1951, Jane.
Well done, Jane. Well done, Jane.
Good comeback. Listen, Ken, enjoy the rest of your holiday over there. We're not jealous at all of 29 degrees and sunshine and margaritas and all the rest of it, whatever else you're enjoying over there. But enjoy the rest of it anyway. Thanks very much for talking to us on the programme again this morning.
No problem, mate. Have a good weekend.
Nice one. Thanks, Ken.
Bye-bye.
Yes, Ken Doherty there, former world champion, enjoying his holidays in Fungarola, and why wouldn't he indeed as well? We'll hear from Ken next week, of course, when the Ryder Cup is up and running. Coming up, by the way, will be Deirdre Smith fairly shortly, but I just want to mention a charity event is taking place out in Crumlin. On October the 27th, Crumlin United and Crumlin Running Club have teamed up in aid of Diabetes Ireland for a 5K and 10K run on the night, and also a charity game for over 35s taking place down there in Pierce Park on the AstroTurf. And at Leon JN4, that's the contact there if you want to get involved in that. One thing is, fantastic charity, of course, to support, but also it's great to see these kind of structured events coming back to the fore after the year that we've had with You Know What. Okay, you're listening to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. Just coming up now to 22 minutes past the hour of 9 o'clock, and as promised, we're going to stay with golf, and we're delighted to be joined on the line by our resident golf expert, one of Ireland's leading amateur golfers, Deirdre Smith. Good morning once again, Deirdre.
Morning, Declan. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Very well indeed. Thanks indeed for joining us this morning. Plenty to discuss in golf. Let's start, I suppose, with the ongoing events at the KLM Dutch Open, and the Irish doing really well in that overall.
Yeah, fantastic to see Niall Carney there at the top. He's two off the lead. Great for him. And of course, we have Graham McDowell as well, at 7-under. So, I mean, it's a long way from his winning putt in the Ryder Cup in 2010, but no doubt he'll be trying to you know, climb the ranks again. But fantastic to see Niall Carney there, just two off the lead, well in the hunt there. Shot two great rounds of 65, 69. I mean, he's probably has been installed as one of the favourites, which is amazing. He's one of the shortest odds there. So it just goes to show you the kind of the respect that the bookies have for him as well. James Sugar there at 3-under and Cormac Sharvin at 2-under as well. So, you know, it's nice to see four of them there in the mix. It's a long way back for Sugar and Sharvin, but certainly Niall Carney in with a great shout, and wouldn't it be a great Philip for Irish golf to see him deliver this weekend, and he's been showing a really good form this year. So He won't be afraid to go on and win that tournament. It's a fine tournament. It's a fantastic field in it. So, you know, it's hopefully a strong finish for him now over the weekend.
Yeah, hopefully indeed. Confidence certainly won't be a problem for him as he starts his third round today with two sub-70 rounds on Thursday and on Friday. But he's in a different position. I certainly don't remember him being in this type of position before, Deirdre. So it's all the mental side of it as well, how you cope with that, being in that particular position.
Sure, and I mean, today is a big day. You know, there's a lot of big-time players in that tournament. You know, they'll start maybe to make a move today. And, you know, weekend golf is a little bit different to Thursday, Friday. And, you know, the pins are tucked away and you have to be kind of patient. And, you know, you have to really believe in what you're doing and stay patient and no hope that the thing will turn around if you have a bad hole or things go against you. And, you know, that comes with confidence and self-belief that you know, if you do have a bad hole, that you can turn it around. And there's a lot of good players there who will have that experience. But, you know, Kearney's done well this year. He's been, you know, kind of really consistent all year, and you know, hopefully he'll be riding the crest of the Irish golf wave. You know, there's been so many good things have happened in Irish golf this year, and I don't think he'll be lacking in self-belief. So today is a big day for him. So if he can stay there or thereabouts today, he has a great chance tomorrow.
Yeah, we wish him every success in his endeavours to land the KLM Dutch Open as well, as you say, Deirdre. Round three today, and of course the final round taking place tomorrow. In terms of ladies golf, obviously we know the impact of the Solheim Cup and all that over the last number of weeks, but great news as well for Olivia Mahaffey, who made the cut in her first LGGA appearance as well. So well done to her.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Olivia's she's up there on the field as an amateur. I'm maybe mistaken. I thought she had turned pro, but she got an invite to that LPGA event. She's made the cut on just one over par. There are a lot of good players ahead of her. Jin Young Ko is leader at 8 under. And it's not a huge mountain, you know, 9. But if she finished in the top 20, it would be a marvelous result for her. No doubt she's been inspired by what Leona have done. She's a big time player, Mahaffey. It's great to see her having made the cut. Unfortunately, Stephanie Meadow is her trend this year is downward. She's 6 over, missed the cut. Disappointed for her. I'm disappointed for Stephanie. She's a marvellous player. But look, hopefully next year she can turn it around. Sometimes she can have a bad year and then bounce back the next year and maybe find something. So, you know, she's only a couple of rounds away from coming back again. But fantastic for Olivia, fantastic for Irish golf. I mean, to have three people, I know Leona's not in the field this week. She's off until the 1st of October. She's not coming back until the classic event in New Jersey the first week in October. But it's fantastic to think that we have three Irish players now on the LPGA tour regularly, and that can only bode well for results going forward.
Yeah, absolutely, no doubt. And Leona taking a well-deserved break there after her exertions in the Solheim Cup there recently as well. So she's off till, you say, the 1st of October, so it's about two more weeks or so before she comes back on the tour.
Yeah, so she's obviously you know, needed a break after her exploits in the Solheim Cup. She's gone to 42 now in the world rankings. I mean, top 50. That's just a marvellous position for her to be in. She was 117 at the beginning of the year and just climbed the rankings. And now the cameras are going to be on her. So it's going to be different now. When she returns on the 1st or the 3rd of October, you know, she's going to get a lot of coverage because of what she did in the Solheim Cup. And, you know, she's well able for it. She's obviously enjoying a nice break at home. Sometimes when you have a break like that, it can go one of two ways. She might come back with a bang, or it might take her a little while to get back into it. But I predict a tour win now before the end of the year. I really do. I think she's going to really, push on. What a platform the Solheim Cup has given her. She's beaten the best in the world, and they are the best in the world. And you know, she has all that confidence from when she was an amateur, and certainly I predict. Great things for her, to be honest, without putting any pressure on her. But, you know, I think an LPGA event is the is the lowest we can expect from her. But, you know, no doubt she'll win a major, and, you know, the sky's the limit for her, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's always fantastic to see people, whatever sport it is, develop and then deliver on their potential as well. And she's definitely going the right way about that. I mean,
yeah.
For and Olivia, indeed, every success in the future as well. Now, the immediate future of golf, of course, Deirdre, is going to be next weekend. And we spoke to Ken Doherty there a little earlier on. He's going to be glued to it. I've no doubt you are going to be glued to it as well once it starts next weekend. Your thoughts on the team, the European team, now that it has been completed with Padraig Harrington's wildcard picks?
It looks like an experienced team. You know, the names are so familiar. You know, Porter, Garcia, Ram, McIlroy, Casey. You know, obviously, you know, we all know Justin Rose has missed out, and I heard Ken's thoughts on that. You know, that perhaps Lowry would bring more to the team, and you know, there's no I in team, and you've got to have 12 people who will go out onto that back of field and give their all and die for their team members. And I think if you have that, it's worth an extra person to you. So it's like the 16th man in a rugby team being the crowd. I think that team bonding and that team ethic certainly is worth a lot to the European team. And, you know, we all know about the individuals in America. You know, we talked about it a couple of weeks ago there. They're a bit indoors. They're all superstars. They're the best on paper. But, you know, I mean, the world ranking for the Solheim Cup for America was averaged at about 22, and the world ranking for Europe was an average of 44, but Europe won. So Catriona Matthew did a marvellous job as team captain. I mean, Harrington will bring that team ethic to the team room, and, you know, I've no doubt that, you know, he'll bring a bit of magic, Harrington. And, you know, last week I kind of looked at the Americans and I thought, oh, God, they look so strong. It just depends on the job that Stricker does. And I have a lot of time for him. I have a lot of respect for Stricker. I think he'll do a great job with the team. He's kind of been one of those people who's been kind of steady all his life. He's never been one of these kind of swashbuckling sort of players. I think he'll bring that kind of hard work and dedication and team ethic, and he'll really get the best out of him. And I think he's the American trump card for me, Stricker. And if he can get his team right, it'll be interesting to see what happens. But look, Europe, we like to be underdogs. We're always better as underdogs. And in great rivalry, it'll always come down to the wire, because, you know, the Americans won't want the Europeans to have the bragging rights on tour. So it'll come down to the wire. It'll be interesting to see what happens. It's difficult to predict, in my opinion.
It's the type of event, though, that people will watch, even though they mightn't necessarily be, you know, overly interested in the sport. You know, it's like horse racing. People will always watch the Derby or whatever, you know, and people will watch the All-Ireland football finals in football and hurling. And this Ryder Cup is the same in golf next weekend as well. I'm sure that you're counting down the days and have the time slots booked and all on the television already for it, Deirdre.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a global event. There'll be people talking about it in my work who don't even play golf. You know, it'll get a lot of coverage. There'll be a lot of media around it. And if the Americans start fighting with each other, then, you know, it'll certainly bring a bit more drama to it, and everybody will want to be watching it. So it's one of the great iconic events of the year. You know, let's hope Padraig Harrington can do it, and that McIlroy and Lowry can bring a bit of Irish magic to the Ryder Cup that we've had for years and years.
Yeah, well, you did quite correctly say there's no I in team, but you can make the word me out of team. So let's hope that the Americans do that in force next weekend, and the Europeans can bring the Ryder Cup back across the Atlantic from Whistling Straits. Deirdre, a pleasure as always. Thank you very much indeed for joining us this morning. Enjoy the Ryder Cup next weekend. I'm sure that the lads will catch up with you at some stage about that as well.
Okay, Declan, take care.
Thank you very much, Nate. That's Deirdre Smith there joining us on the line, talking all things golf, including the Ryder Cup coming up next weekend. Okay, you're listening to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to insuremyvan.ie. We're going to take a commercial break and we'll be back with Gridiron and NFL. Yes, indeed. Welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport here in Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to insuremyvan.ie. Declan Drake with you, sitting in for Reg here until 11 o'clock this morning. Well, already on the programme this morning, we've had Ken Doherty talking all things sport and, of course, Deirdre Smith talking golf. And now we're going to turn our attention to gridiron and the NFL. And delighted to be joined on the line this morning by Stephen O'Brien from the UK and Irish Packers. Very good morning to you, Stephen.
Declan, what's going on?
Long time no speak, my friend. How are you keeping?
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? I mean, we haven't spoken so long, and then the Packers get trounced, and then I'm on the radio talking to you. So, yeah. It's. I wish it was better circumstances, Declan, to be honest.
Didn't want to start on the negative, but the fact that you've mentioned it already, come on, let's get it out in the open. What went wrong?
Everything. Everything. Right, next question. Look, it was a terrible game. The Packers, they have a tendency to do this sometimes, especially when they travel. It's an odd one, though, because they put the reason down to... Now, again, let's remind people, unfortunately, and remind myself. I tried to block it out. They lost 38-3 against Jameis Winston. So this is a Saints team who had, first ballot Hall of Famer, Drew Brees, in their quarterback. He rides off into the sunset, and they have Jameis Winston in. And here's a guy who makes sort of these brain fart moments and these mistakes and these cringy pre-match sort of speeches. But, on the podcast, I did proffer, and I said, look, what version of Jameis Winston are we going to get? We got the good one, unfortunately. And then Aaron Rodgers had one of his worst games in a Packers uniform as well, which is bad. So, we ended up going down pretty heavy there. We didn't have any answers on offense, any answers on defense. And Aaron Rodgers threw 5 interceptions last year. He threw 2 in that game against the Saints, Declan. So it's not really a winning formula. Now, according to the media, all is lost. And again, it's a bit ridiculous the way it's playing out in the American media when you consider the fact that the Packers were the number one scoring offense last year. They were a top team on third down. They were top in the red zone. They scored more points than anybody else. Aaron Rodgers ended up, getting the MVP award. So to think that a team has went from best to worst is, ridiculous, really. And they expect to bounce back this week. But it was a pretty shocking loss in the sense that, what they put it down to, Declan? I mean, this is, you and I, we've been waiting, me particularly, we've been waiting months for the NFL to come back. There's been all of these sort of, distractions and, all this type of stuff. And they put it down to the Packers not being up for the game, which is pretty concerning that, do you really have to jazz your team up to play week one? You'd expect them to be raring to go, but they weren't. And that's not sort of what you'd expect from potential Super Bowl champions. This was a team that expected Declan to come back and win it all this year. They brought back an awful lot of the players, if not nearly all the players, that they had last year to take another go at it, and it couldn't have gone worse.
Okay, that's a fairly accurate, I think, assessment overall of it. Hopefully things will turn and turn quickly for them, Steve. We're looking at 3 particular games this week. First up, Houston Texans versus the Cleveland Browns. How do you think that one may pan out?
Yeah, so this is where my ACA went out in flames. And I went out in flames last week because the Packers had their worst game in recent history. And then, of course, we had another team, the Bills, went up against the Steelers. And the Bills, again, they're another Super Bowl favourite. And they were up 10-0 at halftime. I was sitting pretty thinking this was all going great. And then all of a sudden they get absolutely trounced. So if we're going to take another run at it, when you look at the Texans, they're in a pretty bad situation. They're in a sort of a rebuild mode. They're not long after turfing out their general manager / coach, who could have thought that could have went so wrong. And of course, Deshaun Watson, their quarterback, Deck. I mean, this is a guy who's mired in sort of sexual harassment, sexual assault lawsuits. I mean, the guy was a superstar. Then he wanted out of Houston because he said, you didn't include me in the look for this new coach. And then all of these cases come out. And now he's the third string quarterback, the highest paid member of the team, but the third string quarterback on the team. But Tyrod Taylor, Deck, I mean, he put in a great show against, it was the Jacksonville Jags last week, let's be clear. But the spread on this one, Declan, is 13, which means that the Browns have to beat the Texans by 13 points. There's an 80%, let's talk statistics this early in the morning, there's an 80% chance that they won't cover the spread and that this game should fall within about 12 points. So if you want to take the risk, I would bet on the Texans not to lose by those 13 points. The second game there you're talking about is the Rams coming up against the Colts. There's only 3.5 spread on this one, so the Rams have to win by a touchdown. I reckon they can pull that out against the Colts. Matt Stafford's doing a great job. We all know the brilliant job that they do there in LA, and they have a proper quarterback, everyone's saying now. And Matt Stafford, we've faced him so many times with the Lions. He is legit, so I reckon the Rams will come out with that one. And lastly then, we're coming up with the Arizona Cardinals, who were absolutely gangbusters last week. I mean, they absolutely trounced their opposition, and they just look good on every facet of the ball. So they're a 3.5-point favourite against the Minnesota Vikings, who still have a pretty young defence deck, so I reckon they can pull out the win on that. If you go for all three of those games, put a tenner down, you'll get 70 back, and I can redeem myself from last week.
I suppose as long as the Packers win, you don't really mind, do you?
I don't care.
No, you don't care. Listen, you can't get any more honest than that. I would be the same with the teams that I support as well. Couldn't care less what was happening around us as long as we're winning ourselves. Now, for those that are interested in the NFL, and it's a growing community all the time, this side of the water, just go through the TV schedule if I can. On Sunday at 5 o'clock, San Francisco 49ers versus the Philadelphia Eagles. Then the 9:15 game is Dallas Cowboys versus the LA Chargers. And your next fix will be on Monday, which is at 1:15 a.m. in the morning, I believe.
Kansas City
Chiefs versus the Baltimore Ravens. So plenty of good NFL action to look forward to there over the course of the weekend, Steve.
Yeah, and look, it's a great season so far, because we've seen the sort of Super Bowl favourites fall already, which is crazy. You know, the Bills get defeated by the Steelers. We see the Titans get absolutely ran all over by the Cardinals. The Packers put up one of their worst games. And if you look at, you know, the golden boy Patrick Mahomes, they only squeaked win against the Browns by 3 points. And Tom Brady, who's ageless, he goes up against Dallas in the opener. And if you look at him, they only squeaked that win as well. So, you know, it's so unpredictable, the NFL. And if anyone hasn't watched it, like you say, tune into those games on the weekend, put them on record, or even catch the highlights on YouTube. They're free, because it's going to be another fantastic season.
Well, certainly you're keeping a close eye on your ACCA, all right, that's for sure. Houston Texans, LA Rams and the Arizona Cardinals. Steve, pleasure as always. Good to talk to you again after such a long absence. Welcome back, and welcome the NFL back. And no doubt you'll be back on with Reg next Saturday, hopefully with better news of your beloved Packers.
Oh, please. Thanks, Declan.
Stephen O'Brien there of the UK and Irish Packers, bringing us up to date all things NFL from stateside. Okay, you're with Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to insuremyvan.ie. Just coming up now to 9:45. We're going to take another commercial break, and when we come back, we'll be talking horse racing. Welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport here on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to insuremyvan.ie. In the final furlong of the opening hour of the show, racing coming up shortly with our own George McDonough, racing pundit and Over the Line show co-host as well. You can text us on the show if you have any comments on what you've heard so far. 087-1155-777. WhatsApp is 087-188-1068, and of course all across social media, Facebook, Dublin's Talking Sport, Twitter at Sport 1068, and Instagram, Dublin's Talking Sport 1068. The message in that here from Colm in North County Dublin for Stephen O'Brien on that WhatsApp number. Keep the faith, Steve, with the Packers. One bad week doesn't necessarily make a bad season. Yeah, okay. Wish him the best with that. Now, going to turn our attention, as I say, to horse racing, and delighted to be joined now on the line by George McDonough, racing pundit from the County of Galway and Over the Line show co-host as well. A very good morning to you. Welcome back to the programme, George.
Thanks, Declan. I'm very delighted to be here, and I hear the Packers talk about the Packers, and a Packers fan, basically myself, what a caning we got last weekend. But look, it's all about sport. It's about participation. But last week was certainly a wake-up call to the Packers.
Oh, yes, indeed. And a wake-up call for your fellow neighbours there from Mayo as well, but we won't really go into that too much at the moment either. George, on the racing front this week, the Lucky 15 is an interesting selection from three different tracks, starting at home here in Navan, the 2:55 and a horse called Chemical Energy. Why do you think that might be a good choice?
Well, a very, very good bumper horse. Won two decent bumpers, which for people would be just follow the racing there, the flat races that National 100 races start off in their youth. Both decent contests by the nature of the track. The winner, Roscommon, was a good win. The Down Royal impressed me. He then upped himself in class, or he was upped in class by trainer Gordon Elliott, to the Grade 1 bumper at the Dublin Festival of Racing at Leopardstown in early February, where he was well beaten fourth behind Kilcruet, who put up one of the bumper performances of the season in that contest, and let's be clear about it, was second. That was a really, really hard race. They ran from the gun in that race. It was a very impressive performance by the winner, but I thought Chemical Energy didn't disgrace himself. Well beaten, let me say, but didn't disgrace himself back in fourth place. He then went to the Cheltenham Festival, in my view, out of his depth, most definitely, but was 11th in the end behind Kilcrute, who was second to Sir Gerhard. To me, that race is always a similar race to follow when they go first time up over hurdles, because although he was outclassed, you still need a fair level of ability to contest that particular bumper at the Cheltenham Festival. And Chemical Energy, trained by Gordon Elliott, thankfully returning this week with winners, and Davy Russell, one of the nicest jockeys you're ever likely to meet, a real gentleman, horrific back and neck injuries for the last 11 months, defied medical science, I think, by getting back. And I think this will be his first winner back for his good friend Gordon Elliott. And I think Chemical Energy, it will be short price, but I think he'll win the 2.55 at Navan.
I think jockeys have to be one of the most respected sports people in any sport for what they put themselves through, and the damage that they can do to themselves physically with the falls and stuff that they have. I mean, listening to Ruby Walsh over the years, the man's a walking encyclopedia of injuries and could write a book on them, I'm sure, and how he's recovered from them. Okay, we're going to move then to your second choice, George, which is from Catterick 445. A horse called a Carabino.
Yeah, Carabino. There's another, he'll be short enough price, I think. We're looking at about 6-4. To me, very significant that Mark Prescott, one of the shrewdest judges in the English training lists, very, very smart man, sends one runner to Catterick where he has a very, very good strike rate. This horse won 5 on the bounce early this season. A race at Catterick, a couple on the all weather, then disappointed somewhat. He's got up a total of £35 in the rating. You know, that's a huge jump in class. That's 5 levels in class, really, he's got up. He's a front runner, small field, so significant that Prescott, though, sends him north. Has been off for the last, 160 odd days, which is, 4.5 months. Sure to be freshened up, has run well fresh in the past. I think he'd get a free roll on the front here. Luke Morris, stable jockey, goes up to ride this only runner from Prescott at Carrick. Take the tip, 6-4, I think this will win.
6-4 there in the 4.45 at Catterick. Okay, your last two selections, George, are both from Ayr. First of all, the 2.30, a horse called Golden Apollo, and then the 3.40, Ostillo.
Yes, now this is really good because we got two shorties out of the way. These two runners are running in minefield handicaps. The 3.40 is the Ayr Gold Cup. The 2.30 is the Consideration Race, the Silver Cup. Both have maximum fields of 25. So we're mixing the good with the hopeful here, I think. But to me, the 2.30 Gold and Apollo. Tipped this up a couple of weeks ago at Ripon when he finished second to Just Another Bottle. Beaten a length and a half, but ran a very good race in that great St. Wilfrid handicap, a good yardstick of a race in the north of England. He has since been well beaten at Haydock, but there was only 7 runners at Haydock. This horse needs to be covered up. He needs a big field to be seen at his best. He's £2 lower than when he won the very same race in 2019. Jockey David Allen gets on very well with him. Tim Easterby's team are in very good form, the trainer. The bigger the field, more this horse likes it. He's well enough drawn. He'll come down the middle to stand side. And I think Golden Apollo at 22-1 is cracking each way value. That's the Silver Cup. Then we go to the Ayr Gold Cup, one of the toughest sprint handicaps of the year and a great race. They'll bet 8-1 the field in this race. All those towards the top of the list are top towards the top of the handicap as well. They're all very good horses. But down at the bottom is a horse called Ostillo, trained by Paul Midgley, and ridden by Billy Garrity, who will claim £3 off, bringing his weight down a little further. Back in 2018, this horse was good enough to win the Britannia Handicap at Royal Ascot, one of the biggest three-year-old only handicaps of the year. And at the Royal Ascot Festival, we know that everything is having a go and the maximum fields and all the handicaps. That was a very good performance. Then went on and won a Group 2 at Longshaw later in the season in October. Deepish enough ground there. I think there's enough juice in the ground. It says good to firm it air, but they had some rain yesterday. Fourth last time out in the Beverly Bullet, which is a 5-furlong race at a really tough track, Beverly, where he caught my eye, let's say, on the inside. That's not saying he wasn't trying, but I just thought he'd done his best work at the finish behind. Tis marvellous. And the aforementioned Just Another Bottle, who's linked to Golden Apollo in the first leg of the Ayr Gold Silver Cup Double. But for me, this Ostillo, tailor-made for a race like this. Drop back and trip, I'm not worried about that. You'll need to stamina. for the 6 furlongs a year. He has that in abundance from his 2-year-old days and his 3-year-old days. And I think Ostilio, again, a big price, 14-16 to 1, I think is cracking each way value to be the fourth and final leg of our lucky 15.
Super stuff, George. We'll put all those up across our social media channels a little bit later on. Thank you very much indeed for joining us this morning, and we look forward to following your selections over the course of the afternoon as well.
Thanks, Declan. And best of luck to everybody for the weekend.
Thank you very much. Thank you indeed to George McDonough, Racing Pundit and Over the Line Show co-host. That's just about it for the first hour. We'll be back after the news at 10 with Gaelic Games and Soccer. Welcome back to the second hour of Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to insuremyvan.ie. Declan Drake sitting in for Reggie Corrigan this morning, guiding you through the very best of particularly GAA and soccer over the course of the next hour. But an interesting topic relating to rugby coming up shortly. 087-1155-777 is our text number. One in here from Paul in Crumlin. Paul wanted to know again the lucky 15. As I say, that will be up across our social media platforms a little bit later, but I will take the opportunity once again to give it to you, Paul. 255 from Navan Chemical Energy. The 445 from Catterick is Carbeno. The 230 from Ayr is Golden Apollo. And finally, again from Ayr, the 340 is Ostilo. So there's your lucky 15. Jane, as I say, we'll have those up on social media a little bit later on this morning. Okay, we're going to turn our attention now to a very unfortunate event that happened last weekend at Donnybrook in the rugby between Connacht and Ulster in the Vodafone Interpro Championships. Delighted to be joined on the line this morning now by journalist Louise Lawless, who covered the story extensively, indeed in the Irish Times, at the beginning of the week. First of all, good morning, Louise. Thank you very much indeed for taking our call and joining us on the programme this morning. Great to have you.
Good morning, Declan. Thanks for having me.
Not at all. You're more than welcome. I honestly thought, Louise, that days like this were well behind us. For those who mightn't necessarily be in the know, can you briefly explain to us what the background to the story is, please?
Yeah, so as you were saying, Connacht and Ulster were playing in Donnybrook for the third place playoff in the Vodafone Interpro Championships. And so before the match, they arrived. Because of COVID, they're not allowed to use the changing rooms due to the amateur status of the game. But instead of being brought to somewhere suitable, they were kind of brought to the back of a car park where there was like industrial bins. There was apparently rats running around, and they basically just had these like one-man gazebos to change in. And it was obviously just, you know, not the standard for women's rugby in Ireland or any level really.
No, it certainly isn't. And I'm sure that the reaction has been quite strong from all sides as well to this.
Absolutely, yeah. But the key thing is that a player shared a video of the scene and put it on her social media, and then that got subsequently shared. So there was no sort of, you know, there was no official stance saying this is where the people are getting changed. So it's kind of almost like they knew it wasn't great and they just like thought it would be okay for the women. But yeah, just the reaction has been quite strong over the last week, and the IRFU have come out and apologised for it and said they'll do better the next time. But I suppose that remains to be seen at this moment.
Yeah, it certainly does. I'm just reading something from your article here, which appeared in the Times. A player surveyed the scene with her phone and, quote, rats running around the changing tent for the Interpro, not good enough, captioned alongside the video. And so disappointing for it to happen, and particularly, you know, when you have a major sponsor involved in this particular competition as well. Hardly good for them.
No, absolutely. And it was so disappointing because this is like so much progress for the championships, because it was the first time they were being televised. So TG Fahir stepped in and said, we're going to show them all live, and it was great. Like, so this, it was really big, and the World Cup qualifiers are on at the moment as well, so a lot of the Irish players that would have been playing weren't. So it was a really good opportunity to showcase all these new players coming up. Like, they were getting this chance that would have been taken by Irish players. So there's a lot of good to take from it, and then like it's just been totally overshadowed by the poor treatment they got. And it's just not good enough, and like everyone wants to focus on the score and the match, you know, but like we're again talking about treatment and standards for women.
Yeah, and apparently the players had been asked not to comment on the issue either, which is a little bit concerning.
Absolutely, yeah. So that was it. So basically I got in touch with a few of the players once I saw the video, and in different provinces, and they had been saying like, yeah, that's grand, I'll talk to you in a couple of hours, and that was okay, and I was hanging on waiting for them. And then they one by one were like, actually, we're not allowed to talk anymore. Direct your comments to either Connacht, Munster, Ulster, or Leinster Rugby. That was also just a little point of concern. You know, like something had happened to them and they weren't being allowed to speak about it. But there was one player that said, Actually, initially, she was like, I'll speak on the record, even after getting her warning. And then a day later, she was like, actually, look, it's just too much of a risk. Can I go anonymous? So, like, a big props to her for still doing it and still putting her words on record, because that would sink in with a lot of people more than, like, me narrating the facts. You know, like, someone saying what actually happens now, they felt, will sort of resonate a lot more and let people understand how it felt to turn up and be expected to perform after that.
It's sad, it's disappointing, it's frustrating, it certainly shouldn't happen at any level. Do you have any more instances where this type of thing is happening, Louise? And it's particularly disappointing when you consider the tremendous strides that have been made to promote women's sport, hashtag 2020 and all that over the last couple of years, and then something like this happens just to seemingly knock down the deck of cards, if you like, and all the good work that's been done on it.
Yeah, it does feel like sometimes that if it looks good and if there's a good PR element, it will, you know, travel well, but the basics aren't being done consistently, you know, and the structures aren't in place for things to progress. But we do see a lot of, you know, photos being taken and things being streamed and all the rest, but like maybe behind the scenes there needs to be a little bit more work done to like build structures and have them follow through consistently so that stuff doesn't, like this doesn't happen ever again, or that it never happens in the first place.
Yeah, I hope to God that we're never talking about this type of an issue again. It really is disgraceful in the modern day 2021 that such things should be happening, and we're trying to progress women in sport and get more and more girls and women involved in sport as well. You've done a tremendous job on the piece, Louise. I'm sure that in some respects you would rather not to have written it, but your general response to the piece and that you received during the week?
Yeah, I got a lot of responses, actually. There's a lot of people coming in saying, like, you know, I actually got a few players coming in messaging me with different things saying, and actually this happened as well and that happened as well, but no one wants to talk about it publicly because obviously, like, everyone wants to keep their place. But you know what? Everyone was rightfully disgusted. Like, you wouldn't put an under-10s team out in something like that, you know, never mind a full-grown squad of women. Like, but yeah, the response has been great. It's great to see that people are annoyed about it. You know, something like this could have been reported 10 years ago and might have gone under the radar because people didn't care too much about women or women's sports. So it's great to see that people are getting annoyed now.
Okay. And just for the record, how did the match end up anyway?
So it ended up in a draw on a points difference. And so Connacht ended up coming third and Ulster took fourth place. But unfortunately, that was very much overshadowed.
Yeah, very much so. And just looking at the pictures that I've seen during the course of the week, it looked like it was a well-attended event as well. People are just dying for the opportunity once again to get out and experience live sport after the 18 months or so that we've all endured.
Yeah, and it will be interesting to see now as you know, further restrictions are lifted and more stuff comes back, how that will have impacted, because for the All-Ireland finals as well, for me in Dublin, there was a great turnout I got in terms of COVID and just what you've seen in the last few years. So it definitely looks like, you know, there's some silver linings to all this, that people are starting to sort of pay a bit more attention and actually buy a ticket and turn up, you know.
Yes, indeed. Well, Louise, you've done excellent work in highlighting that story there throughout the course of the week. Well done to you for that. And thank you very much indeed for taking the time out to speak to us on the programme this morning about it as well.
Not at all, Justin. Thanks so much for having me.
Fair play, thank you very much indeed. That's Louise Lawless, their journalist, talking about that awful event last week at Donnybrook in the Interpro clash between Connacht Women's Rugby and Ulster, and the players having to change in the facilities, or the lack of facilities, that they did indeed. Okay, you're listening to Dublin's Talking Sport and Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to insuremyvan.ie. When we come back after the commercial break, we're going to be talking all things Gaelic games in the capital. Okay, welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to insuremyvan.ie. It's just 18 minutes past the hour of 10 on this Saturday morning. Going to turn our attention now to Gaelic games, and it's a particularly busy time on the playing fields of the capital with the championships in all four codes either underway or getting underway. So who better then to get an opinion on what's been happening in the men's and ladies football championships so far than we are Dublin man Nigel McCarthy, who joins us on the line now. Very good morning to you, Nigel.
Good morning, Declan.
Thank you very much indeed for joining us this morning, my friend. How are things on the north side with you?
Oh, grand, perfect. A nice dry day, so we'll take that one.
Absolutely, absolutely. Okay. Now, the championship in the men's football began last week, of course. Defending champions Ballymun Kickhams, as we mentioned on the programme last weekend, had a 2-point victory over Thomas Davis at Parnell Park. A close enough victory for them, but important for them to get their championship campaign off to a winning start.
Yeah, it was, Declan. Yeah, as you say, it was a tight enough, particularly first half, between the two sides, and Ballymun found themselves, three adrift at half time. With 20 minutes to go, they were 5 down, and it wasn't looking too good for them. But their strength and depth, the subs that they brought in made a big impact. And for the last quarter, they outscored Thomas Davis 8-1 to claim a very good victory, and to get their defence off onto the perfect footing.
Yeah, the other game in that group, Scariest Harps beating Clontarf by 11-7. And one of the standout results for me for the weekend, Nigel, was the Group 1 encounter between Ballyboden, St Enda's and Raheny. 2-17-8 for the former Dublin Leinster. And indeed, in their time, All-Ireland club champions Ballyboden, St Enda's as well. It's not the fact that they beat Raheny, in my opinion. It's the margin of the victory. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, the margin of the victory was surprising. I didn't, when I was looking at these games, beforehand, I wasn't expecting. I was expecting Bowden to win, but not by the margin they did. And to be honest with you, Raheny gave a good account of themselves, particularly in the first half. They forced a number of turnovers from Ballyboden, and at the break, Bowden led only by 2 points. And it looked like it was going to be a really competitive second half, but. Bowden turned on the style in the third quarter and just pulled away from them. And, in the end, they were deserving winners, and the scoreline reflected that.
There's no doubt about it that the Fairhouse Roadmen are going to be there or thereabouts when the big prize is handed out. And another team who will be hopeful of being in that similar position on the double this year in hurling and football is Na Féinne, of course, from the Moby Road. They enjoyed a good victory over Whitehall Columbkills, 118-12.
Yeah, they did. Whitehall started the game brightly. They were 3-2 up early on, just before in the first quarter. But Na Féinne dominated, the rest of the half, and at the break had built up a 15-6 lead. It could have been even bigger as well. Whitehall were saved by the woodwork twice in that first half as well. So they could have been truly out of sight at that stage. In fairness to Whitehall. They gave it a go in the second half, particularly in the third quarter, and they reduced the deficit down a little bit. But they needed goals, and they did get an opportunity. They got a penalty, but Cormac Costello's effort was saved in the, I think it was around the 44th minute. But Na Féinne wrapped it up then with a David Quinn goal late in the game, and again another side who deserved the victory.
Yeah, Cormac Costello, of course, a dual star with the club, played hurling the week before as well. And moving to Group 2, Kilmacud Crokes, again, they're not going to be too far off when the big prize is handed out. They had a good victory over Kieran Kilkenny's Castleknock.
Yeah, they did. This was a really entertaining game, really good game as well. But look, as they say, goals win games, and that's exactly the way it worked out. Croke started off brightly, built up a 6-point lead before the water break, but that lead was halved by Castleknock by half time, thanks in no small measure to a Rob Shaw goal late in the half, but two early goals from Croke's in the second half from Tom Fox and Hugh Kenny sealed the deal for them. It gave them that buffer to be able to just play out the game for the remaining minutes, and again another well deserved win. They were the better side throughout.
And Sean Lane, our hurling analyst, joins us in studio to talk about the hurling side of things in a few moments. But he is a Ballantyre St John's clubman, of course, and will have seen his football team go down to St Vincent's 117-210 in their opening match last weekend.
Yeah, look, Vincent's used to be the side to beat. They've not won the big prize for a couple of years now in the capital. I'd say they would be happy enough just to get out with the win. Again, another tight game, that one. It could have went either way, but I think probably a little bit more experience of Vincent's helped them to get over the line.
Okay, then in Group 4, Lucan Sars and St Jude's drew 1-14 apiece. So Round Towers in Lusk, this was a surprise to me, I thought anyway, beating Oliver Plunkett's Own Rue at 3-16 to 19 points.
Yeah, that was a surprise result. I expected Plunkett's to win that one. I think Round Towers last year didn't win a game in the group stage, so they'll be delighted to have got off this year on a winning start. But again, as you say, goals win games, and the three they got in the game ended up being the important scores. You know, Plunkett's, I think, will be very disappointed having lost that one.
Yes, indeed, they will. And of course, the second phase of games in that championship is next weekend. Turning our attention now, Nigel, to the ladies. Foxrock Cabinteely, a week after winning their sixth consecutive Leinster club title, well, they're on the trail for seven in a row in the county. They beat Kilmacud Crokes in a repeat of last year's final, 4-7 to 11 points. Now, that's a statement of intent from Nipper McNally's girls.
Yeah, it certainly was. Again, another scoreline that wasn't expected. You know, if you take these two teams have met in the last two finals, and although Cabinteely won both finals, there was only 2 points in it on both occasions. So, it was certainly a statement of intent, and they're still the side to beat in Dublin. And, you know, as you say, they'll be there, thereabouts at the end. It's going to be hard to see anybody beating them again this year.
Yeah, the other game of that group, I was at it up in the Kiltipper Road there, Thomas Davis and Clontarf, 2-9 Thomas Davis, 1-12 for Clontarf is how it finished. Tarf missed a penalty in that, but got a last gasp equaliser to get a share of the spoils, which was important for both teams to get something out of that, considering the quality of teams that are in the group around them.
Yeah, it would be seen very much so as the group of death with the teams that are in this group. And it was important for both sides. You could take something from it. Davis went into the game on the back of winning the adult cup competition last week, beating Ballybode and St Enda's. So, it was one of those. It was hard to call. You're looking at the sort of meetings of the two sides, you know, in the adult cup competition and the league this year. You know, it was one of those that was probably a toss of the coin when you were looking at it. You know, and I'd say, look, in the end, Clontarf are probably just happy that they got a point in it. You know, they were in the dying seconds, they got the equaliser, so they'll be happy to have got away with something from that, considering the two teams they have, you know, both teams have coming up.
And Ballybode and St Enda's, they're going to be contenders in all codes this year, aren't they? No doubt about it. And the ladies team, of course, under the guidance of former Cork star Valerie Mulcahy, opens their championship campaign with a victory over the team that won the intermediate championship last year, Coola. Two goals between them at the end of the night, Nigel, 4-11 to 2-11 in favour of the Fairhouse Road girls. It's a victory that you would have expected.
Yeah, it was. Ballyboden, I would see, is probably the dark horses this year for the title. And again, it was important for them to get off to a winning start, you know. But look, in fairness to Coola, you know, 2-11 is a decent score. It will win you some games in this competition. But, you know, look, Ballyboden, they've been motoring along nicely over the last two seasons, and they seem to be building themselves back up to be genuine contenders.
Yeah, beaten semi-finalists, of course, last year. Foxrock beat them in the semi-final. And the other game there was St Bridget's 5-17, a local side to yourself there. Fingallians 4-5. So Bridget's off to a flyer in their title charge for 2021. Okay, that's great.
Yeah.
Sorry, Nigel, go on, yeah?
No, I was just going to say it was again another scoreline I wasn't expecting. These two sides have met a number of times this season. There's been very little between either side. I was quite surprised when I seen that scoreline come through.
Okay, and again, that's a couple of weeks. I think that championship will resume. But all the big guns starting off with statements of intent: Foxrock, Cabinteely, Ballybode, and St Enda's as well. There. Okay, just before we let you go, Nigel, just a quick word on the ladies' intercounty team. Disappointment, of course, against Meath in the All Ireland final a couple of weeks ago. Now, still trying to get over it myself. But the fallout from it, in your opinion, will there be much change, if any, ahead of the 2022 campaign next year?
Yeah, I think we will see change. I think there's probably a rebuilding process going to have to go on there. Mick Bone in his post-match press conference, you know, stated that that game against Meath was probably the last one for maybe five or six of the panel. So there's definitely going to have to be a rebuild there. Some of the players that are, you know, the ones we'll be thinking of, that do go, it's going to be a huge amount of not only talent but experience is going to disappear from that side. So you know, it's certainly going to take finding probably some new stars during this current club championship. And look, they're going to have to look at maybe need of raise the bar again. It's going to take a little bit of working out of their defensive system and how they play. And look, it's going to be a mighty challenge. And look, we haven't heard whether Mick is staying on or not yet. So it's going to be interesting to see if that happens. You know, I think it's probably needed that he does, because I think he's the man to bring them forward again. And look, he might see that as a good challenge to get, not only get back and winning titles again, but also, you know, redeveloping a new team and a team that can challenge for major honours.
Yeah, I'm not a great fan of change myself. I like things to stay the same or the status quo as much as I can. I'm a traditionalist in that respect. I'm afraid of change in a lot of areas, and I just feel that it's coming here, and you know, it's going to be very, very difficult. But look, where there's a will, there's a way, and we'll see what happens. Nigel, thank you very much indeed for joining us on the programme this morning, giving us your insights there on the men's and ladies club football championships in Dublin, and also things and the county team as well. And you do great work there with We Are Dublin across all four codes, hurling, football, ladies football and camogie. And look forward to reading your stuff over the next few months, and indeed alongside your great friend and my friend indeed as well, Noel Murphy. So the very best of luck to you both.
Thanks very much, Declan.
Thank you indeed there to Nigel McCarthy of We Are Dublin. So that's the football side of things covered, but the Senior Hurling Championship, sponsored by Go Ahead Ireland in the county, is really heating up this weekend with a second round of games and quarterfinal positions up for grabs. So who better then to speak to than Sean Lane of Ballantyre St. John's, our hurling analyst, who once again has joined us in studio to have a look ahead. Good morning, Sean, and welcome back to the show.
Morning, Declan.
Good to have you back. Right, where do we start? So much happening. Let's start, I suppose, with Coola, the defending champions, beaten the last time out in their first game of the season by Kilmacud Crokes. They're back in action tomorrow afternoon at O'Toole Park at 4 o'clock. The men from the Kiltipper Road, Thomas Davis, stand in their way. Simple, have to win the game, will they?
Coola, that is. But Declan, if I just put on the record to add weight to the ladies' rugby plight highlighted earlier there by Louise. I mean, in this day and age, an interprovincial rugby game with Ulster and Connacht, totally unacceptable, disgraceful and shameful. And I think I'd like to put that on the record. And getting around to your question, I think Coola will win tomorrow. They were very poor the first day, they'll know that themselves. They have an awful lot of injuries, Declan, that they have people away. I spoke to a cooler source yesterday. They were missing six or seven, but I'm reliably told that only Khan and Simon Timlin will be back the next day. So they're still going to be missing Keane. They're going to be missing young Cronin, who's down in Australia. Oisín Gough's ACL is gone as well. So the cooler team that's going to go here is going to be completely a shadow of what the teams that won the Club All-Irelands were. They conceded three goals the last day against Crokes, a very young Crokes side. You know, they'll probably get over the line, and they'll have a real head-to-head battle then the very last match to see if can they make the quarter-final. I predicted the last day that they probably would, along with Bridget's, and you know, they say it's a woman's prerogative to change their mind, but I can change my mind as well. From what I've seen, I think it's going to be Bridget's and Crokes will go through now at this stage.
Yeah, and speaking of Bridget's and Crokes, they meet tomorrow afternoon at Parnell Park at 2 o'clock as well. So that'll be an interesting cross-Liffey battle.
Yeah, absolutely. And you challenged me the last day about, you know, looking, going for election on the north side. But I think Johnny McGurk has done a smashing job with them. You know, they've smashing players with Alan Olin and Andrew Dunphy, the under-21 player, along with Keane O'Sullivan, who's now, you know, almost a regular on the Dublin senior team, and the ever green Dara Plunkett. I think that they've definitely improved. If you go back to the county final 2019, they stayed with Coola, who were a lot better then, Declan, than they are now. They stayed with him right up to the very end, and that's going to be a humdinger tomorrow. I mean, you know, if Bridges can get back to that form, they have a great chance of beating Crokes. Crokes, the last day, I mean, there's certainly an introduction of young players. I mean, they have Paddy Lenehan and Dara Purcell and people like that. But they still, I looked at the six backs, they still had Bill O'Carroll, Kian McGowan and Fergal Wheatley, who usually plays in the half-forward line. So there's three very experienced backs. They had, funny enough, Crokes at Ushin, O'Rourke in the middle of the park. And up front then, I love this little player. He's a down lad, Lorcan McMullen. I think he's a smashing player. And, you know, let's be clear, any fella that's getting three goals in a senior championship match, like Ronan Hayes did the last day, tipping balls over fellas' heads and going through. He's powerful, he's strong, he's left, he's right, he's tall, he's big, he's brave. He's going to be very, very, very hard for Bridges to deal with.
One of the other standout games over the course of the weekend is at Parnell Park today at 4 o'clock. Craig Kieran versus Nafina. Now, Nafina are the Division 1 league champions. They recorded a 4-27-113 win over Whitehall Columbkill, while Crave won their first game beating your own beloved BSJ, Ballantyre St John's, by 9 points. Nafina, they seem to be on a quest this year in both codes, hurling and football, and as regards the hurling championship, getting over Crave is the next step in it.
Yeah, and to be fair to Nafina, they have smashing players. I mean, you've Shane Barrett and they have the acquisition now of Liam Rush this year. Throw in the two Curries up front, Peter Feeney at the back, you know, Paul O'Dea. They've actually smashing players. And they scored 4-27 the last day, which surprised me. I thought Whitehall would be a lot better than that, but they scored 1-13 before the water break, and I think I said that the last day here. But they're very, very similar the way they play. They're all fast, they're all glick, I think is a word, that, you know, smart, and they're, they've great wrists and etc. But up against Craig Kieran today, Craig Kieran just played this game a little bit differently than everybody else. Craig Kieran will probably, you know, have Gary Kelly working as a sweeper. They still have Eugene Farrell there. They'll still have Stephen Chester in goal. Up front, anybody would tell me that Keane Dervin and Billy Ryan aren't good forwards. You know, there's something wrong. I saw the Ballantyre game, and Crave, you know, they use possession absolutely fantastic, drop their lines back for the opponents. So if Nafina to win, and I do expect them to shade it, they're going to have to solve two problems. They're going to have to work out how they deal with Gary Kelly as a sweeper. And I know when they played in the league, Craig Kieran played a sweeper against Nafina, so I suspect they'll do the exact same tomorrow. But also they'll have to, with Craig dropping back the lines, they're going to have to work out a plan as to how to get possession there.
Okay, one that's going to interest you directly, Ballantyre, of course, is the clash with Whitehall Columbkill, O'Toole Park 4:30. So two sides here looking for a first and important championship win.
Yeah, and I suppose both of them have very, very young sides. I mean, Ballantyre have, you know, Ian O'Hare, Tom Ahern and Seamus Fenton, who've been on and off county teams, and they're you know, going very well in training. We've had a dip and a lull for the last 3 or 4 years, but no more than you mentioned about maybe Mick Bohan has in front of him. That's what's been going on in Ballantyre, but it's going on in a lot of clubs. I mean, Crokes are the same, Cooler will have to do the same shortly, and Ballyboden are underway as well. I was surprised with the low scoring that Whitehall put up against Nafina, but I'm expecting you know, Dara Gray and these lads to come out tomorrow, O'Donnell, and have a right cutter this afternoon actually, against Ballantyre St John's.
Yeah, 4:30 at O'Toole Park. Now, Ballyboden St Denis were saying there to Nigel McCarthy of We Are Dublin, who was on just a little bit earlier on talking about the football championship, are going to be at the coalface of all the senior championships this year, and they're playing Fogs in their near neighbours at Parnell Park at 6 o'clock, again determined to kick on and qualify for the quarterfinals at the earliest possible opportunity.
Yeah, and Bowden will take this game serious. I mean, it's a long time since, you know, and Bowden have probably gone back and they'll realise themselves from the 5-in-a-row team under Liam Hogan, and they won a smashing championship in 18 under Joe Fortune. But like, they could still call on Shane Dorkin, Simon Lambert at the back. They've Paul Ryan, Niall McMurray up front, two formidable forwards, and Finn McGarry in goal. I expect them to beat Fogs today, and I expect them to easily get into the quarterfinal, and will they be good enough to get across the line? Do you know, I've just been going through my mind all week. I can make a case for 5 or 6 top class teams that why they can't win it, but you know, someone's going to win it, so it's whomever gets it right from here to the end is going to be a thing, and it could be any one of 5 or 6 teams.
Yeah, it's going to be a fascinating championship. Elsewhere, Oliver Plunkett's Own Rua versus Scully Connell. Satanta versus St Vincent's. That's at O'Toole Park tomorrow afternoon at 2 o'clock. That's a curtain raiser to Coola and Thomas Davis. And then St Jude's will take on Luke and Sars in Group 2.
Well, I think that game is worth a mention. Certainly the winners of the last day. I mean, Jude's, hand up again, Declan. I must have had a bad day. The last day I fancied Vincent's to beat Jude's, but Jude's, you know, Jerry McManus and Owen McLaughlin were super at the back, and sure, Danny Sutcliffe up front. But they conceded 3 goals and they were still able to beat Vincent's. I think it was 3-11 to 22 points. They'll have their work cut out against Lucan. Lucan will know that they'll have to, you know, win this game, because they don't want to be going into the last game playing Vincent's. I mean, Jude's have Vincent's played. Jude's will win the last game, but Lucan don't want to be going in having to beat Vincent's as well. That's a group, funny enough, Declan, three teams could end up on 4 points.
Right. Yeah, it'll be interesting. All right, that's for sure. In the minute or so, 2 minutes left on this, Sean in studio with us, Sean Lane of Ballantyre St. John's, the former Dublin Minor, another 20 manager, hurling manager. On the managerial front, Brian Cody is back once again as Bannisdorfer and Kilkenny, and we're still waiting for White Smoke in Galway. Thankfully, it's not going to be Matty Kenny now. We know that from last week too. But talk of Micheál Donoghue coming back. So, first of all, Brian Cody, quickly, good or bad decision?
Well, look, at people in Kilkenny know best. You know, I wouldn't dream of telling Kilkenny who their manager should be. Look, I've said this before, there's no right or wrong answer to this, Declan. Take the Mickey Hart situation, he's gone to win the All-Ireland. Take the Sean Boylan situation in Mead. You know, they've won one Leinster championship since he went 16 years ago in 2005. And on that day, everybody remembers this fella threw the ball over the line rather than kicking it. So it can work either way. If from a Kilkenny perspective, to answer the direct question you asked me, there are people like Henry Shefflin, there are people like DJ Carey, there are people like Eddie Brennan, you know, who probably don't want to kind of put their hand up and get it shot down. So is it, look, Brian will know himself whether it's time to go or not. There is a rebuilding, but they haven't won the All-Ireland, which is a long time for Kilkenny, since 2015. So maybe it's time for a change.
And finally, do you think Micheál Donoghue will go back to Galway?
I think Micheál Donoghue, if I was the Galway chairman, I would prefer Micheál Donoghue sitting in a kitchen having a cup of coffee with Joe Canning to say, look, we've done this before, Joe. Please come back and play with Galway. Everybody wants you. Everybody would want to see you play. I believe he's a very, very good candidate. I think he suits the Galway players. Great respect. Managed Clarenbridge at the club scene to win the All-Ireland in 2011. Managed Galway in 2017. They hadn't done it for 29 years. I would say it's the right mix to have him back managing Galway.
Well, some would say he should probably never have left in the first place, but that's another day.
That's politics.
Sean, thank you very much indeed for your insights. Look forward to, I'm sure you're going to enjoy watching some of the games over the course.
And I'm sure you're on the way, Declan, to watch your beloved Crumlin against Coole over in
Shangana Park at 6 o'clock, our second game with the group, beaten the last time out by Raheny. Look, it's a tough ask, Sean, but we'll keep our heads up and we'll keep battling for the parish.
And probably the fact that Coole are missing quite a few from the A team might help that some of the top teams on the Coole will go.
There's no such thing as a bad hurler in Coole.
No, that's for sure.
Anyway, thanks very much indeed for coming into studio there. It's just Sean Lane giving us his insight, all things Dublin GAA hurling wise. Okay, it's listening to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to insuremyvan.ie. And after the break, it'll be football all the way with Alan Cawley. Stay with us. 6.8. Welcome back to Dublin's Talking Sport here on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to insuremyvan.ie. It's Declan Drake in for Reggie Corrigan on the final section of our programme. We're with you here until 11 o'clock this morning. And as usual on the programme, we keep the best to last. And it's football now all the way to 11 o'clock with our very own Cawley's call man, Mr. Alan Cawley. Good morning to you, sir.
Too kind as always, Declan, too kind.
Still waiting on the cheque for last week.
I see you're waiting on a few cheques, Declan, to be
honest. I'd say so, yeah. I think I better move to credit transfers. I mentioned earlier on I don't really like change, but I really do have to try and adapt a little bit quicker to what's going on around us in the world with the technology and all the rest of it.
This Revolut thing, what? Have you bought into this Revolut thing?
Revolut?
I don't know what it is. Have you bought into this?
No. I don't even know what Instagram is. It's just, I see it happening to me, so...
You'd like Instagram, Declan. Yeah.
I'm just about getting the hang of Facebook and Twitter, Al, so it takes a little bit of time. Anyway, let's start with what happened last night and the FAI Cup, of course. Quarterfinals took place. Bohemians beating Maynooth University 4-0. Dundalk 3-3 at Finn Harp. St. Pat's beating Wexford Utes 3-0. And UCD exiting the competition at home to Waterford 3-2. Certainly no shortage of drama. You would have expected Bohemians to do the job they did on Maynooth, and they did. Let's talk briefly about Dundalk. We knew going up there last night to Finn Park they needed to win to maintain their aspirations of European football next year. They were 3-1 up against Finn Harp, Sal. What happened to them?
Yeah, I think it was split in two last night, the quarter finals, Declan. As you said, Bohemians were always going to win, and St. Pat's were always going to beat Wexford as well. So the other two were the games that threw up all the drama, and that's what we expected because they were very tight to call. But the Dundalk one, to be 3-1 up and down to 10 men, Finn Harps as well, you would expect them to see the game out. But by all accounts, Finn Harps threw the kitchen sink at them, as you would expect in a cup tie with 10, 15 minutes to go. And Sean Boyd, he suffered a really tough time of it, Sean. Obviously, he broke on the scene with that amazing goal against Bohemians, I think it was, a couple of years back. And then he suffered a horror injury when he was kind of basically away on a PFEI camp, and he was trying to get himself back after leaving Shamrock Rovers and get himself back on track in terms of his career. And he suffered a really tough time with over the last couple of years. But to go up to Finn Harps, and obviously Ollie has taken a chance on him, and he repaid him last night by coming on and getting the two goals. And it was just amazing, the third goal in injury time as well. And the drama of the cup and the magic of the cup, as you say, Declan, it was there for all to see in Finn Harps last night. And to be fair to Finn Harps as well, they deserve a huge amount of credit because they've been on a brilliant run of form in recent weeks. We're quick to give out about them at times, but they're on a brilliant run of form. And it was an unbelievable result and keeps them in the hat. And obviously, they look forward to the replay on Tuesday night now in the door.
Yeah, we had hoped to have three Dublin sides in the last four. Unfortunately, that's not going to be the case. It's only going to be two, Bowes and St. Pat's. UCD edged out again, a late winner for Waterford there last night. On the league front, Al, huge game tonight at the Showgrounds. Leaders and champions Shamrock Rovers away to Sligo. It's been a good week for Sligo. I mean, they beat Dundalk on Tuesday, and if they can beat Rovers tonight, they're within 2 points of second place Pats. Now, on the other side of the equation there, if Rovers can win, Shamrock Rovers that is, they'll go 6 points clear and still have a game in hand. So, intriguing night and prospect in the Showgrounds.
Yeah, before I just get to the league, do you mind, Declan, if I was out in UCD and it was probably the best game I've watched all year? It was absolutely brilliant. And for anyone who's looking to do something on a Friday night and their local team is not playing, go out and watch this UCD team because the value and entertainment they give you was just phenomenal. And that's every time you go out there, really. A couple of young players playing for them. Colin Whelan, under 21 international, is going to be a big star in the league. And young Liam Kerrigan as well was outstanding. And Waterford added so much to the game as well. It was absolutely brilliant, Declan. Probably the best game I've seen all year. And as you say, Waterford nicked it right. I think it was an injury time. Andy Myler was furious over a free kick that they should have had up the pitch. And Waterford broke and got the winner. But it was a fantastic game of football. But now to jump to the league action, yeah, with Sligo Rovers. They've had a great week, not only beating Dundalk Tuesday, but they beat Pats the week before as well, Declan. So if they were to beat Shamrock Rovers tonight, that would be a hell of a week. Especially when you consider before the Pats game last week, they hadn't won in 10 weeks. So they've really bounced back to form. It's been a good week for them. Hopefully they can carry that on tonight against Shamrock Rovers. But on the other side of the coin, as you say, if Shamrock Rovers to win, they would open up the gap on Pats and tonight will be one of those games in hand as well. So they'll be looking to obviously open up a larger gap than the 3 points that it is at the moment. But they're expecting a big crowd in the Showgrounds as well. There's always a bit of a hostile atmosphere when Shamrock Rovers come to town as well, and they're all looking forward to it. So it should be a great game in the Showgrounds.
Yeah, absolutely. And Shamrock Rovers are away to St. Pat's next Friday night in a top of the table clash. So that'll be interesting. Let's go cross channel, Al. The Premier League, four sides locked together on 10 points at the moment: Manchester United, Chelsea, Liverpool, and Everton. And an early opportunity for a couple of hours at least for Liverpool to go top if they can overcome Crystal Palace this afternoon.
Yeah, I think Liverpool are very close to being back to their best, Declan. The start that they've had in the season has been absolutely outstanding. During the week, I know for 5 minutes they kind of switched off against AC Milan and they got two goals in the European game. But for all the other parts of the match, for the first 40 minutes against AC Milan and even in the second half when they were chasing the game, I thought Liverpool were absolutely outstanding. And he left Van Dijk out and Mane, so you use them to come back into the team today, which they will come back into the team. And of course, they look a lot stronger when Van Dijk is there. And that's the question mark that people will be asking. If he does leave him out and he's trying to mind him and rest him and look after him, obviously coming back from the big injury that he had, can they cope without him? And during the week, obviously they conceded two goals, so everybody points to the fact that he wasn't playing. But coming back against Crystal Palace, I expect him to get the job done. Even though Crystal Palace, to be fair, had a great win last week, beating Spurs 3-0. Zaha back to his best. Obviously, the new signing, Odson, Edouard as well, getting two goals on his debut. So, should be a good game, Declan, but I think Liverpool will beat Crystal Palace.
And a question for you from Fergie on Facebook. He says, Al, are United going to bounce back from the European disappointment last week when they play West Ham tomorrow?
I'm not sure, Fergie, to be honest, because it's a tough game against West Ham. Obviously, West Ham were in Europe too and they had a good win. The big thing, I suppose, though, the big blow for West Ham is that there's going to be no Antonio, and he's their talisman, really. But West Ham have turned into a fine team, Declan. Moyes has done a great job. But United need to bounce back because that was such a disappointing result during the week. And not only the result, the performance as well, and the manager's decisions, because once Wan-Bissaka gets sent off, he has to take Ronaldo off, or Pogba, or whatever. You're carrying fellas then, and you're already down to 10 men. And that's exactly what happened, Declan. Young boys got totally on top of them in the second half. United were overpowered, really, because, as I say, you're carrying a couple of the luxury players, and he should have took Ronaldo off. He didn't make the big call, the big decision, and they got caught out. And I think that's the criticism of Solskjaer. Will he make the big calls and the big decisions? He hasn't up to now, and I don't think he ever will, to be honest with you, Declan. So, tough game for them tomorrow. Be a tough one to call. So, yeah, I don't know, but they need to bounce back, definitely.
Yeah, it's a few points on Solskjaer that Ken Doherty shares, because he was telling us a little bit earlier on. He felt that way as well. The Premier League action gets underway today with Wolves taking on Brentford at 12:30. Burnley then host Arsenal at 3 o'clock from Turf Moor. And I want to finish on this one, Al. Manchester City and Southampton at the Etihad at 3 p.m. Now, what did you make of Pep Guardiola's comments during the week about the fans and their ability to turn up in numbers?
Yeah, I think the comments that he made during the week, he's entitled to make those comments. But then when the Man City, the head of the supporters club, or whoever it was, Mr. Parker, I think they were calling him yesterday, had a go back at Guardiola, I listened to Guardiola's reasoning. And I'd be on his side, Declan. I don't think he said anything out of turn. Basically, all he was saying was that we want more people to come out and watch the games. And I don't think he was questioning the fans in any way. He was just saying we want more people to come. But the thing is with Man City, Declan, they've only become big because the money that has come into the club in recent seasons. They'll never have a fan base like a Liverpool or a Man United or any of the huge clubs over the years that have been building this tradition and history for years and years and years. Man City have only had this in recent times, so they'll never ever create a fan base that'll match any of those clubs. And I think Guardiola just has to understand that and deal with that. And I've been over to the Etihad since they've taken over. I was over there a couple of years back in a big game against Chelsea, and it was like a library, Declan. It's so soulless, it's so lifeless. There's absolutely nothing about it, no atmosphere, no memorabilia outside, no history, no heritage of the club whatsoever. And it's pure money. That's all that project is. It's pure money. And that's the only reason Guardiola is there as well and all the top players. If they didn't have the money that obviously has been put in behind the scenes, he wouldn't be managing them either, to be honest.
Interesting, all right. Elsewhere in the Premier League, Norwich take on Watford, Aston Villa versus Everton. And I think Spurs playing Chelsea tomorrow as well. That's going to be a big one.
Yeah, Spurs-Chelsea is the game of the weekend probably, and Chelsea have obviously got off to a great start. Spurs had a good start before the international break, but then obviously they suffered a heavy defeat last week. So the question mark is still out on Nuno, I think, but he's only new into his regime, and I think it's going to take maybe 12, 15 games before we get a real trend and pattern just in terms of what he's trying to do with Spurs, because obviously Spurs want him to be on the front foot and attack him, but he's not that type of manager. He loves to play in the counter-attack with Wolves, so it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But Chelsea and Tuchel look so strong, Declan. But it should be referenced that last week against Aston Villa, even though they won 3-0, and on paper it looks like a comprehensive victory, but Aston Villa had unbelievable chances, and only for the keeper, they probably would have got something out of the game. So Chelsea can be got at, but I think Tuchel, to be fair, and obviously the addition of Lukaku this year, they look very, very strong.
Yeah, it's going to be a fascinating weekend's action. I say getting underway at 12:30 this afternoon. Games all the way through the weekend and indeed tomorrow as well. Alan, pleasure as always. Georgie Kelly was on the podcast. A very good listen it was too, I have to say, in fairness.
Yeah, thanks, Declan. He was great. Yeah, lovely lad. Obviously, he's a great player, scoring goals for fun, but he's a lovely lad as well. And combining education with his football as well. So if anyone hasn't listened to it, it's worth listening to if you're a young lad, obviously, who's looking to play and do his education as well.
Super. Alan, pleasure as always. Thank you very much indeed for joining us. Look forward to chatting to you next week.
Thanks, Declan.
Thank you, Alan Cawley. I'm afraid that's all we've got time for on the show today. Thanks for listening on Dublin's Talking Sport, with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. Jane McNamara was our producer. We'll all be back next Saturday morning at 11 o'clock. Stay safe, folks.